You know that if you want to engage in some kind of sport, almost any kind of sport, I suppose, there might be many different kinds of skills that you need to learn, different things you need to develop. So you can focus on different skills at different times. So it's the same thing with meditation practice, that there are many different skills, capacities we can develop as we learn to meditate. And sometimes it's helpful to focus on one for a period of time, just focus on one in particular. And that's what I'd like to do this evening. I'd like to talk about a very important quality of meditation practice. It's not universal, it's not always appropriate, perhaps, but it's a very important one. And that is the capacity to let go. And Buddhism is often associated with letting go. And the reason for that is that if you pay much attention to your mind, which is what we do in this practice of ours, we pay attention to what's going on, and we often become aware of our minds and our bodies, that sooner or later you'll discover that you're holding on to something. And you're holding on to things with your thoughts. You just have some ideas, memories, or concerns, or planning that are going on, or anticipation that's going on, or conversations you've had that you're rehearsing, or there's something that's kind of going on and on and on. And sometimes it's a surprise in meditation to realize how much it's going on and on and on. And you try to stop it and just be with your breath, and it's like a bungee cord attached to it, to your thoughts, and you just kind of get zapped back to it because it's so strong. Sometimes you pay attention to that phenomena of being attached, being preoccupied or caught by things, and you can feel how much suffering is involved in that. And there's a lot of pain, a lot of suffering sometimes that comes together with being somehow caught or being in the grip of some concern or preoccupation or resisting something very powerfully. And if you sit still and pay attention, one of the things you might discover sooner or later is that it's not inherently necessary to be attached, not inherently necessary to be caught up in things which are not, that doesn't have anything to do with the present moment. So if you spend a lot of time planning, it might in some circumstances seem very appropriate to plan, very necessary to plan, but when you sit here with your eyes closed, it's not necessary. Or there are situations where in life where it's maybe it's appropriate to remember things that happened in the past, but when you sit here and meditate, there's no inherent need to do that. And so there's an opportunity here in this simplicity of this environment of meditation to let go of these things that preoccupy us. And learning to let go, learning to be good at letting go, is a very important skill to develop when you learn to meditate. So then there's a practice of learning how to do that. Some things it's very easy to let go of, and some things are phenomenally hard. And it's very important to be respectful how hard it is to let go of some things. So it becomes a study, becomes an exploration. What does it mean to let go? What does it mean to let go in different situations? And what are the things that are necessary or helpful? What are the conditions that make it possible to let go of things so that I can experience some degree of peace, so I can feel some degree of relief from the normal kind of ways I'm caught by things and preoccupied by things? And so one of the first things then to understand about letting go is that it's useful to do. It's useful to let go of some things. And so when you sit down to meditate, it's useful to let go of planning for tomorrow or planning what you're going to have for dinner. It's useful to let go of rehearsing conversations you've had in the past. It's useful to let go of fantasies that have nothing to do with what's happening in the present moment. So thoughts about the past, thoughts about the future, imaginations that have to do maybe about the present, but nothing about what's really going on. It's useful to understand that it's helpful to let go of that if what we want to do is meditate. If what you want to do is become the world's best planner, then maybe plan away. But if what you want to do is learn to meditate, then you have to have some willingness or some understanding that letting go of certain kinds of thoughts is a very important quality of that needs to be developed and cultivated. So letting go. And then what does it mean to let go? How do we let go? And there's many ways of letting go, many things that help with that letting go process. As I said, sometimes it can be very easy. And so one of the things to explore is, where is it easy? Can you let go of your thinking? If you're thinking about something, can you let go of that subject, that thinking? Okay, I'm not going to plan. Put it down. Put it to rest. I'll do it later. I'll drop that. And you're only going to drop that if you're somehow convinced that it's not useful for the time being to plan. And you might think it's not useful, but does your mind believe that? So there has to be some really deep understanding, deep sense of valuing that it's helpful not to, in this setting, meditation setting, to not be caught up in those thoughts. So that's the first thing you do, is to see that. The other is to have an ability to switch directions for the attention. So the attention, if we're caught up in our thoughts, in a sense our attention is directed to our thinking. A certain degree of our attention, energy of attention is directed to our thinking. So part of letting go is redirecting that attention. So we're directing it towards something different that's more useful to pay attention to, that's more meditative. And there's a range of things that can be, but one of the things we do in meditation practice that's very common is to direct the attention or settle the attention on the breathing. The breathing is always in the present moment, and so if you're connected to the breath, you're in the present moment. The breath has a wonderful capacity of settling, bringing calm, bringing concentration. There's a lot of benefits to being connected to the breath. But one of the benefits of redirecting the attention to the breath is the energy of attention is no longer going into feeding our preoccupation. But now the energy of attention is going into something else. And what happens when we do that is we weaken the preoccupation. And every time you redirect your attention, you let go, in a sense, of your concern, your thoughts, and redirect your attention back on the breath, you're weakening the strength of preoccupation. You might not notice that you're weakening it. It might be so minuscule, the change. You let go, you connect to the breath, and you go back to your thinking. You let go, or you redirect your attention to the breath, and you go back to your thinking. It happens very quickly sometimes. Maybe some of you notice that, how quickly it can happen? Now, one thing that happens is that people get discouraged. But I would like to suggest to you, there's no need to get discouraged, that every time that you direct your attention back to the breath actually is a retraining of the mind, actually weakens that habit of being concerned or caught by the thoughts. And one of my favorite little cliches of or little sayings of the Buddha goes something like, with dripping drops of water, the water jug is filled. With dripping drops of water, the pool is filled. One drop doesn't do much, but a drop after drop after drop, you know, a whole big water container can be filled. So the same thing with the mind. With each little moment of letting go, each little moment of redirecting, we're beginning to weaken or thin out the attachments, the preoccupations, the way we're kind of gripped by certain kind of patterns of thinking. And this is, I think, a very important thing to realize, because sometimes people have black and white ways of thinking that, you know, I have to let go and it's just either or, like I have to let go and that's it. I'm just going to either caught, attached, and then I let go and then I'm not, and it just, that's the way it should be. But one of the things that happens in meditation practice is the attachments that catch us, the preoccupations with our thoughts, the strength of it gets weakened gradually. I like to think of it as it's thinning out. And it's wonderful to kind of feel and sense the thinning out of the attachments and the preoccupations. If you sit down first to meditate, then you're really caught by some concern from your life. And you can feel the strength of it and the power of it. And just energetically, physically, you can feel sometimes a churning away. Got to deal with this. And then as you sit and you calm down and relax and redirect your attention, let go, and slowly you can feel a calming effect that settles in, or thinning out of thinning of that attachment. And so attachment doesn't disappear like that, but it thins and thins and thins. And then at some point, when it gets thin enough, then maybe you can have this magic moment where you can let go of it. Okay, I don't have to do that anymore. But until it becomes thin enough, you can't just easily let go of it, you know, once and for all, because the habit, the energy is there so strong. So coming back and redirecting attention over and over and over again, and being doing patiently, has this effect sometimes of thinning out the attachment, settling it ourselves. Sometimes the sense of attachments can have a very physical quality to it, especially when they're quite strong. You might feel that your forehead is all bunched up and tight, or you might feel your jaws are tight, or your mouth is a little bit something going on, or your shoulders are hunched and held, or so it can be hands sometimes, or it can be very slight, it can be clenched in some way or tightened a little bit, or the belly, or the chest muscles, or something. And sometimes you can the letting go is physical. We can let go of that holding, and which is very important. If you can identify physical holding that is somehow connected to the preoccupation with your thoughts, that gives you a huge handle of how to deal with it. Because sometimes it's easier to relax the body than it is to relax the mind. And the mind and body are very closely connected, so if you can relax the body and let go of the holding in the body, it helps to let go of what's going on in the mind. So if you feel really preoccupied, caught by something, rather than staying in the mental world of that preoccupation, perhaps drop down and look in your body. See, is there any tension or stress or pressure physically in your body? And then if you notice that, then see if you can relax and let go of that. Is this making any sense to any of you? Any of you recognize that there's sometimes physical tension or pressure connected to your thinking? Make sense? Could someone give some examples, if you're willing, about where in your body you hold it? Yeah?
For me, it's right in my stomach.
Uh-huh.
It's starting to disappear a little bit more, but sometimes when I'm doing breath meditation, my stomach was just really just like coming like a washboard.
Uh-huh.
And the breaths, I'm taking like short little breaths. That's all I can take because it's so tight. But over time, it's kind of loosened and relaxed a little bit.
Great. Now, is that also affecting your mind?
Yeah, I'm not sure how, though, but it seems like it is, yeah.
Uh-huh. Great, thank you. Anybody else who would like to share a little bit what they've noticed about tension and holding in their body that's maybe connected to attachments or preoccupations of their mind? If you could pass the mic so everyone can hear.
Well, I noticed during the meditation that a part of my back started to hurt a little bit more, and I think it was my body telling me, oh, hello, I'm tense, and so that was kind of coming to the surface instead of being deep, mm-hmm. I guess, hidden or unaware to me in the muscles, and so I was just breathing through that area and continuing to.
Did that relax it a little bit?
Yes.
And then make you less tense?
Yes, I felt lighter.
Mm-hmm, good. So one of the habits that's a very helpful meditation practice is to really be in touch with your body a lot. There's a lot of information in the body that helps meditation process. And so rather than waiting until the body kind of screams, pay attention often to the body, notice the feeling tone, the quality, the tensions in the body, to see if there's anything extra there that can be softened and let go of. Body's a great teacher. Maybe one more. Someone else wants to? Straight back.
I noticed that I was judging myself every time I strayed from the breath, and as I did that, my back tightened even more so. And then I judged myself more, and it tightened more. And it's almost as though I felt like, I can't do this. And the body said, you're right, and I'm going to show you that.
Mm.
But then I got back to the breath, and I would let it go, and then all of a sudden the tension would drop. And then I'd stray and judge again.
So when you can redirect your attention to the breath, then the energy of attention was not going into the judgments,
yeah.
And then you could relax.
Exactly.
But then at some point, something would trigger the judgment again. And then so often that's a great. Sometimes it can take some months of regularly seeing that, and slowly begins to thin out the judgments. After a while, one little trick that I know one teacher suggests. Is if you have something really prevalent, something common like that, is to count how many times it happens. And if you get to like 512, then sometimes it's like you smile, or this is ridiculous, or you kind of like, you have a very different relationship to it when you get to, you know, a big number. It's like, oh, you know, and it can be actually easier. But sometimes if you don't count, then each time is so consequential. You realize the pattern, you know, after a while, wow, this is amazing. It can be an awe. Okay, thank you. So the body's great. So one of the ways to learn to let go is to pay attention to your body and let your body help you to let go by finding the places of holding, and then is it possible to let go without holding? That's another thing to do. The other thing that's helpful with letting go is to appreciate what happens when you let go. Some people, the idea of letting go is... for some people's mind, sounds like deprivation, like renunciation. It's like you have to give, you know, Buddhism, right? At Buddhism, it just teaches you to give everything up, and you're supposed to not have any attachments at all. And you know, if I have no attachments at all, what joy will it be in life? And there won't be any passion, and you know, and I, you know, I won't have be able to relate to my friends. And you know, this letting go thing of Buddhism, it's just overdone, these Buddhists. And so it just, letting go is like bad news. Oh no, one more talk on letting go, you know. So sometimes the notion of letting go can lend itself to kind of some kind of negative feeling, negative associations to letting go. It's like, just, you know, nothing good in it, just letting go into nothing, right? So there's letting go of things. There's letting go of your attachments, of your clinging. But also there's letting go into. And I think this is a very important understanding, is the other side of letting go. You know, if you let go, like if you hold your hand clenched, and you let go of your clenched hand, then you don't get nothing. You get an open hand, and an open hand is a useful hand. You can do things. You can do very little things with this. You can do some things, but usually our culture doesn't appreciate the various things you can do with this. But if you release your clench, there's a lot of beautiful things you can do with an open hand. And so, you know, there's something wonderful opportunity there in letting go. So we let go into the open hand and all the opportunities there. We let go into the ease, the relaxation that's there with the open hand. So the tension of being clenched is painful and tiring after a while. And the letting go is an opportunity to experience something beautiful, something, you know, the relaxation, the ease that's there. So letting go, it helps to let go if we have some sense of the opportunity that comes, or the good that comes from letting go. So the idea of letting go into suggests that. We're letting go into something. We're letting go into relief. We're letting go into peace. We're letting go into a sense of well-being. We're letting going into a sense of being more accepting, not being so judgmental. We're going in, letting go into a sense of... maybe compassion or love, letting go into, you know, there's a lot of things you can let go into. Let go into a sense of gratitude, sense of appreciation. Some of this stuff, what we're letting go into, can be a choice, like gratitude. You don't have to, you know, sometimes you'll feel gratitude, but there's a lot of things to feel grateful for that most of us are too busy to notice or to do anything about it. And, you know, I think that religious people often have tremendous gratitude for just the very mundane things of life. And it really enriches a life to feel gratitude. So letting go of preoccupation, letting go of resistance, letting go of fear. There's a lot of things you can let go of. And one of the choices you can make in letting go, okay, let me let go into gratitude. Or let me go into appreciation. What is it to be appreciated here? Or let go into peace. So if you have some sense of something good, something pleasant or nice that you're letting go into, then it can be a lot easier to want to let go, because it's not deprivation, it's something really wonderful there. And so I was wondering if any of you have some experience or some intuition of something really good that you can let go into when you let go. Yes. Maybe I don't know if you...
Sometimes I'll be at work and my mind will just be going at a million miles an hour in the most mundane things, like silly little things. Then, if I'm able to let go to any degree, I just really enjoy being at work a lot more. It, kind of a sense of joyousness or enjoyment in doing the basic things that I do.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So letting go into enjoyment.
Yeah.
It's hard to enjoy yourself if you're preoccupied. So great.
Well, I think one thing that's helpful for me is letting go, like you were talking about planning. Sometimes might be letting go into the sense of enough, I've done enough. I don't need to do any more.
Mm-hmm. So letting go into a sense of enough, beautiful.
I was thinking of the idea of letting go into an experience, specifically like when going down a mountain, like skiing or something, and I've experienced a lot of fear, and then I've just been able to get over that fear and let go. Mm-hmm. I've taken it and gone into the experience. Mm-hmm. It's been completely taken to another level.
Great. And that's true for many different situations. It can even be letting go into washing your dishes. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, something, you know, dramatic like skiing, which can be great, you know, take you to a different level. But even washing dishes can take you to a new level if you really like go into it well.
Sort of along the same lines, I was just thinking of letting go into richness of just of observation, and just if you're even, you know, walking down the street and very distracted with a lot of things, you'll miss sort of the richness of everything around you and in, you know, physical and sensory experience and all different experiences of just the richness there.
Yeah. When my son, I was reminded today of this. My first son was maybe like 3 months old or something, 4 months old. I was walking downtown with him, and he, by that time, he could smile and he could like beam like this, you know, this, like this, like, you know, one of these great saints, you know, just darshan, this great kind of transmission of joy and delight. And he would look into complete strangers' eyes and just be completely happy to see them. Like, this was like, this person was a gift from God. I'm so, you're the best, you know, you are God, you know, just, you know, you just look into his eyes and you just like feel like the best. And he was just a big smile. And he would do it to complete strangers. And so I was carrying him down the street, and this guy was kind of walking kind of next to us. And he was really kind of in a hurry, huffy and puffy, and really caught up by something. And my son just gave him this big smile, like it was like something else. And the guy didn't pay any attention. Boy, he loses an opportunity. I mean, to get that kind of transmission from some, you know, little being like that, you know, it's great. So, you know, letting go into the richness. And there's so much richness that we overlook. It's really something that's available. Anyone else have experience of letting go into something? So letting go, so understanding the value of letting go, understanding that how redirecting your attention is one of the skills needed for letting go, understanding something about your physical body, the tension in your body, how to let go in your body can help with letting go in the mind, and then appreciating that there's letting go into, that the benefits that come from letting go, and appreciating that, then maybe you're much more likely to want to let go. Because you feel like it's a positive direction, it's a positive thing. It's not just deprivation. There's actually something really waiting for you there, something really good that's waiting for you that you can experience. And then I'd like to add one more thing, one more aspect of letting go. It's a big topic. And such a big topic that it's really interesting, I think, to really explore it and spend some weeks, months, years kind of exploring all the different facets of letting go and aspects of it. But there's one other facet, and that is expressed not by the term letting go, but by the expression letting it be. Instead of letting something go, let it be. And because then you don't have to get rid of anything. But it's kind of letting go also. It's letting go of resistance. It's letting go of judgment. Just let something be. And letting it be means you don't have to get rid of anything. It means a kind of acceptance, a kind of giving spacious allowing of something to be as it is. So rather than letting go of your anger, can you find a very wise way of letting it be? Letting it be means that you don't act on it, but you also don't judge yourself or don't criticize it or resist it. Just let it be there, the simplicity of anger as it's there, or sadness, or tension. You know, sometimes in Buddhism we talk about letting go of tension, being relaxed. And so you feel some tension, you feel, oh, I'm a bad Buddhist, I shouldn't be doing this, and hope no one's noticing, and now I can't really let go of that tension, and what, you know, maybe I don't belong here, I should probably be doing folk dancing instead. And so all this, you know, that's not letting it be. But letting it be just, oh, I'm tense, that's what is. And be simple about it, be at ease with that. Not to make anything about it, but just kind of let it be, okay, that's what's there. And just be present for that. Let it be. Letting be is very profound. And maybe it takes a while to get a sense of the profundity of just letting something be. But letting something be frees you. It really frees you from having to always control or fix our life and what's going on. And as we learn not to control and fix and manipulate how things are, then it's possible to discover a very profound place of peace, of well-being, of stillness inside of ourselves that becomes a resource and becomes a place of strength and support for us in our lives. So those are my thoughts for this evening. So we have a little bit of time now. If you have any questions about any of this or anything else related to practice you'd like to ask, I'd be happy to try to respond.
Is it beneficial to meditate, like have a time for meditation each day, like say 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and every day you sit down at one? Is that beneficial?
So the question is it useful to have a consistent time?
Yes.
Yeah, it is, if it's possible. Some people's lives are so that they can't do that. The opportunity that, or the benefit that comes with sitting at the same time, even in the same place, if you can, is that the mind then has a strong association to that time as being a meditation time, and so your whole psyche, kind of the rhythm of the day, kind of then gets a little bit adjusted according to that regular activity. And so it's sometimes easier to settle, get concentrated, you know, because of that regularity at the same times every day. Also, there's something happens that's interesting if it's the same time every day and you have a commitment to that, then you take the meditation practice out of the world of your preferences. And people who don't have any discipline, any discipline they do, will often live at the whim of their preferences. And you might think, what's wrong with that? But if you're at the whim of your preferences, then you're kind of a slave to your preferences, your likes and dislikes. And you don't really see yourself very deeply. And so in order to become really free and really go deep in practice, it's helpful to establish the practice outside of your preferences. So if you have the same time every day and that's your commitment, then the days when you don't want to meditate, well, I have this commitment. It doesn't matter if I don't want to. I'm going to do it. And then there's days when you want to do it, or you do it. But often, sometimes it's very interesting to meditate when you don't want to. That's sometimes the most fruitful times, because you're going to learn a lot about yourself then and work through a lot of different things. So I think it's very helpful if you can do it.
the role of the Sangha in establishing a practice?
Usually in our circles, we call the Sangha the practice community, the people we practice with. And there's a lot of benefits to having a community of people to practice with. One is a very simple kind of encouragement. Sometimes if you're practicing alone, it's hard to keep it up. And so just sitting with, sometimes even sitting, you know, once a week with a group provides certain kind of enthusiasm, momentum, or encouragement, so it's easier than continue practicing at home alone. So just that sense of encouragement, and it's very helpful. Sometimes for some people it's very helpful to have people they meditate with or know a community of practitioners, because if they don't and they're practicing alone, then they might feel that they're kind of weird. You know, I'm kind of weird, you know, and like no one else is doing that. And so people begin to look at me kind of strange. Oh, she's the meditator. And you know. And more importantly, sometimes when people start meditating regularly, sometimes their values change. And sometimes people don't want to gossip in a bad way, or people don't want to be excessively competitive, or you know, so I get reports from people who come back from places of certain professions, certain areas of workplaces, where it's really nasty, and they used to be able to participate in the nastiness, but they don't want to do that anymore with various things going on, and then they kind of feel kind of weird, they're different, and they feel, I don't know if I can sustain this. But then having a community of people to share your values gives you some strength to maintain it and keep the course. So that can be very helpful. So you realize you're not crazy. And we learn a lot from our practice community. Even when you come and sit in silence and don't even talk to people, just the fact you're just sitting with other people, you somehow pick up energetically, physically, something about what it's like to practice, how some people hold themselves, how they sit, how they talk, how they carry themselves, how they relate to other people. And just watching how other people are can be very inspiring, very encouraging. You can learn from people. I learned a lot from my fellow, when I was still, but I mean, I have very clear memories when I was a relatively new student in Buddhism. Learning from other students, let alone my teachers, just other practitioners, and seeing how they were, how they related, how they were really kind to someone, when, or generous to someone, or wow, you know, that's unusual, or seeing how someone, when he was talking to someone, was really present, and I never seen someone who really was present for someone like that. You know, you're kind of like, you know, how you doing? You know, that's what I was used to. You know. And so I was really inspired that that person is really present. And so, oh, that's what it's like. That's what it's like to be present when you're listening to someone. So I learned that from someone. And so I learned a lot just from being around other people, practitioners, and watching. And no one had to teach me or tell me to be this way. I just watched and saw. And another value is if you have a community, a practice community that you are in relationship to, where you actually develop friends or enough friendship, enough contact that you can have conversations with people, then there's a lot of learning that goes on there. You can compare notes. Oh, you know, when I meditate, this is what happens to me. Oh, really? I had that problem, but then this is what I did, and I learned how to do this. And one of the kind of open secrets in Buddhism, like in monastic Buddhism, monasteries and practice centers, is a lot of the learning, it doesn't happen from the teacher to the student. But happens between the students talking among themselves, you know what they've learned, what they know, and so it's having time to talk to other practitioners, and learning from them and directly their experiences and sharing your experiences, getting feedback, getting people to ask you questions. It's very helpful. Sometimes it's in a practice community if there's people who are much more developed in the practice or much more spiritually mature than you. It can be very helpful to talk to them and get to know them, and for many different reasons. What comes to mind right now is when I was a new Zen student, I was living in Davis, and I would go down to San Francisco Zen Center periodically. And I noticed that the way I usually would interact with people, I had these, you know, social games I played to get my way or get seen a certain way or recognized a certain way. And my friends in Davis, they kind of were doing the same thing. We were all kind of in the soup together, doing the same kind of social games and whatever. And you know, I got away with it. And but at Zen Center, I would do that normal way of being, and people wouldn't respond or wouldn't react to it. They wouldn't pick it up. They wouldn't engage me at that level. And I felt that those more senior people there were like mirrors for me. I got to see what I was doing because it wasn't responded to. If it was responded to, then I got lost in that world. and I loved it to have these mirrors. And that's part of the reason I went to live at Zen Center, was I wanted to be around these mirrors more, because I didn't want to live in that old games, the kind of social games that I was playing. I wanted to change that, and that I'm living among people who are my mirrors to me, like help me see it. That would be really good. It's maybe a little bit repeating myself, but you know, meditation practice and Buddhist practice is not always easy. Sometimes it's really easy, it feels like delight, it's great. Sometimes there are really great challenges in doing it, you know, just like with a marriage sometimes, or a partnership, you know, sometimes it's great, it's the honeymoon period, right, and then that's over, and then there's a whole different game. And so, and if there's a commitment, then sometimes we see it through the difficult times, and maybe it changes into something better again. So the same thing with meditation practice. There can be periods of time that's quite challenging, because one of the people in the relationship is maybe problematic. And since there's only one person in the relationship to practice, you know who I'm talking about. And it's you and the practice, right? So sometimes when things are difficult, you feel discouraged, or something's a big challenge, having a community of people to be around and be supportive is invaluable. I couldn't have practiced as much as I practiced. I couldn't have gone as far as I did in my practice without the support of a community and without the encouragement of a community. I had wonderful teachers. Part of the Sangha, part of the practice community, is also the teachers you have. And part of the function of teachers is to use a maybe an excessively silly word, but part of the function of teachers is to be cheerleaders. Great, you're doing great. This is fantastic. Yes, it's difficult, but you're doing great with it. And, you know, keep up, and it's really wonderful. And I had teachers who, you know, were basically my cheerleaders. You know, it was really great. I feel very grateful for them. So those are some things that comes to mind. Is that enough? So maybe we have time for one more question, if someone has, and then we maybe sit a little bit more.
Well, just a comment to tell you wrong on that is, that's exactly, this is my first time here, and those are all the reasons why I am here now. It's, you know, just sit in a room with other people that want to meditate and that have similar values, perhaps learn things from other people. You've covered them all. That was a perfect response.
Great. Thank you. So should we end with a short sitting? You've been sitting for a while. If you'd like to stand for a moment and stretch, it might make the sitting easier. To begin this session, these 15 minutes of sitting, establish yourself in your body. Maybe like you're lowering yourself into a refreshing pond of water, lowering your body into the bath. Lower your attention into your body. right down to where your body touches the chair or the floor. Feeling how the chair, the floor, the cushion supports the weight of your body. And arising out of that support, like a mountain, stable, upright, is your torso. Maybe take a slow, long, deep breath. And as you exhale, let go into your body. One of the things we can let go into we can let go into our lived experience, not the past, not the future, but this very precious phenomena of the living experience, the lived experience of now, of here. Letting go into it and letting it be. Just this moment, this experience, this breath, breathing in and breathing out. It is the custom in Buddhism that at the end of every practice event that we take the benefits of that event and somehow consider or imagine or offer them up for the benefits of others. So as you let go into your innate goodness, as you let go into what is beautiful about yourself, maybe you can also aspire to let that goodness and that beauty spread from you and somehow or other bring benefits to your neighbors, your community, your family, your colleagues, co-workers. May whatever benefits that come from this time of practice, may it help all beings be happy. So thank you for this evening. It was lovely to be here with the Thursday group here. I